Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Representative Zwanitzer, privilege of the floor.
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Members of the legislature, today over the lunch hour, the Wyoming State Boys and Girls Club Youth of the Year was announced. The Boys and Girls Club had a legislative lunch celebrating over 10,000 members across the state. Three outstanding youth were recognized: Brittany Herbolt from Casper, Angie Sterling from Buffalo, and Whitney Jefferson from Cheyenne, who received the state 2010 title. Please join me in recognizing these three with outstanding applause, as well as family and staff members of the Boys and Girls Club throughout Wyoming in the gallery up on your right.
Madam Chair.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the body, you remember last year we talked about blue books and those being the historical books put out by state parks and cultural resources. State parks will be selling the blue books in the rotunda on Thursday from 8 to 2. If you're interested in getting a set, or singles or whatever you'd like, but they will be available on Thursday morning in the rotunda. And I'll announce it also on Wednesday so that you all remember.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 20. Oh, excuse me. Mr. Leader?
I think the good chairman from Judiciary is going to be ready with the amendments. Is that correct? Yes? Okay. Then there's no change to the schedule, Madam Chair.
The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 20, introduced by Representative Bagby, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding criminal street gangs. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bagby, Barbuto, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Korberg, Throne. No, Patton, Peasley. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 20 do pass. And I would turn over the explanation to the good representative from Carbon County.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Before I get into this bill, I would like to ask you to look at the back of this handout. If you don't read anything else on the handout, please read the last page. I bring you House Bill 20, Criminal Street Gangs. And I'll go down to number one, page one, line one. This is an act relating to crimes and offenses creating the crime of intimidation in furtherance of the interest of a criminal street gang, providing definitions and providing for an effective date. Then you drop down to 62403, intimidation in furtherance of the interest of a criminal street gang. We, at this time, we don't have anything on the books regarding criminal street gangs. A person is guilty of intimidation in the furtherance of the interest of a criminal street gang if he threatens or intimidates by word or conduct to cause physical injury to another person or damage to the property of another. In order to promote, further, or assist in the interest of, or to cause, induce, or solicit another person to participate in a criminal street gang. Intimidation in furtherance of the entrance of a criminal street gang is a high misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment of up to 1 year and a fine of up to $1,000 or both. Dropping down to number four, we have definitions. Criminal street gang means an ongoing formal or informal organization, association, or group of five or more persons having as one of its primary activities the commission of one or more of the criminal acts enumerated in paragraph 15 of this subsection, having a common name or identifying sign or symbol, and whose members or associates individually or collectively engage in or have been engaged in a pattern of street gang criminal activity. Going down down the list, pattern of criminal street gang activity means the commission of, conviction or adjudication for, or solicitation, conspiracy or attempt to commit to or more of the offenses listed in this paragraph on separate occasions within a three-year period, offenses that form a pattern of criminal street gang activity include. And if you go down this list, you can. Those of you who have read the statute books, this is all very common in Section 6 of the Wyoming statute books. So going on down to 3, over to 4, it gives you the whole list. Madam Chairman, this bill covers intimidation. Some definitions are menace, scare, tactics, coercion, bullying, being made to feel afraid of your personal safety. All gang tactics. This is some information from Laramie County in 2009. There are approximately 450 indexed individuals in Laramie County. They represent the following street gangs: the Serenos, Bloods, Crips, Nortinos, and the Vitz Boys. There are more than Nortino gangs that was involved in some frightening shootings in this city last summer. All were drug-related and gang-related, as well as widespread vandalism. Illegal drugs are being brought into this state on I-80, I-90, and I-25. They are being distributed and manufactured by street gangs. Meth labs are creating a toxic threat in small towns and crossroads across Wyoming. Marijuana, heroin, and cocaine drugs are destroying lives. In Wyoming prisons, a large portion of inmates are incarcerated due to drugs. And this costs a high cost to the Wyoming taxpayers. Many school-aged children have one or both parents in prison. We are breeding an entire generation of embittered and disenfranchised prison orphans due to drugs. Lots of gang members are not kids. They are in their 25 to 27-year age group. There are gangs in prison. Some return to gangs when they are released. There have been multiple crimes by street gangs in Casper. There have been homicides around the state and widespread gang activity on the reservation. This bill has the endorsement of the Wyoming Prosecutors Association and DCI. I stand for questions.
Representative Bagby, is there a Committee of the Whole amendment?
I think Chairman Guinry has that.
or Representative Lubnow.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. While we use the term high misdemeanor in the statutes 29 different times, it just seems like a waste of word because it's not a misdemeanor is a misdemeanor, and it's defined by the penalty, and this penalty is 1 year and $1,000. So I'd ask you just to remove the word high as a matter of form. I will tell you generally that I was listening on the – well, I'll save that till debate when we get back on the bill, but I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask you to vote no on the amendment. We use high and low throughout the statutes, a low misdemeanor being $750 and 6 months in jail, a high misdemeanor being $1,000 or 1 year in jail. Once you go over 1 year, it's then a felony. So we have actually worked hard to distinguish the two between a low and a high. We actually did a very extensive bill, 2 years ago, where we went through and specifically changed all the game and fish statutes to make sure it was low, high. So we have made a policy decision to start using that terminology more prevalently throughout our statutes, and our committee is trying to keep that policy moving forward of using low versus high. So it's clearly delineated whether this is a 6 month misdemeanor or a 1 year misdemeanor. And I would encourage you to vote no on the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment fails. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill? Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like the body to engage in a debate maybe at this. I think this is something we need to talk about before we just pass this thing on through. What we're essentially trying to do is we're trying to quantify intimidation. And I think, for me, that's something that is outside the realm of where a criminal law should be. I mean, if you commit a felony that is a listed felony that we have, larceny, aggravated cruelty, bribery, battery, assault, we have specific delineations. Those are things that are easy to quantify. Now we're creating in law, if they exhibit a pattern of criminal behavior of two or more offenses over a 3 year period, and then we can, because of that delineation, say that they're officially intimidating someone. I think that's a long stretch. And for me, I would like to keep the criminal law simple. I think we should have, you know, specific offenses where you're doing this. It's a lot like the argument with hate crimes. You know, a crime is a crime regardless of whether or not what the circumstances were. If you assault someone, you assault someone. And so I would like for us to engage in a debate about this. I think it has implications about the direction that we're going to take this policy. And so hopefully we can get some more discussion.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was driving on the street in my local community, and I was listening to the radio, and a parent called the radio station and told the local radio station on the local radio talk show host about problems that they were having at the local junior high with gang members who were intimidating other students and threatening them. And while her call was frightening, it turned out to be fairly exaggerated because I called the local assistant principal at that junior high, who used to be the good representative from House District 32, who sat in the desk where I sit. And I asked him, what kind of problems are you having? And indeed, he's having problems with gang activity in a junior high in Gillette, Wyoming. He's confirmed that there are specific groups, that they practice intimidation, and that he's even gone so far as taking weapons away from students. And so what this bill does is it gives law enforcement a tool when they're involved in a pattern of activity. And if you talk to our law enforcement friends, they will tell you that nipping these kind of activities in the bud early on is what prevents them from growing into rampant problems that exist in your communities for a long time. And we've been lucky in this state to not have been forced to consider legislation like this. But if we don't seriously consider this legislation now, there may come a time in the future where we will seriously wish we had. And so I'd urge you to give a great deal of consideration to this legislation.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's with great pleasure that I have this opportunity to speak with you about this problem for not only my district, but also for the state. And I appreciate my good colleague also from Carbon County for carrying my water this year on this. I couldn't quite get her handled with my other responsibilities. But I also use similar language to that the previous speaker used. Of course, what we're trying to do here is give more tools in the toolbox for our law enforcement and our judicial system. Last year, we stood with our speaker when he brought forth legislation trying to address bullying and intimidation in our schools. This is a logical step forward to address some of those same problems. I can tell you that these problems are real. And of course, as I've said before, we've had a lot of fun. Of course, you know, what is the gang problem in encampment? I can tell you we have not seen it in my little town yet, but believe me, it's very real and close. What we see, and I'll tell you, the learning curve on this really is not so steep or strenuous when we realize what we're dealing with here is no less than cultures of violence that... You begin to realize that here we see people who have probably very little, and that they will fight over very little as well. And that if in fact we're going to get to these youth that actually need some attention, of course we have to bring them into the system at some point to where we can make it known to them that, of course, what they're doing is wrong, and it is a crime. And from that point forward, we can begin to further address some of these problems that exist within our cultures and subcultures.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairwoman, I certainly don't stand here to discount either the seriousness of gang activity in this state or the need to deal with it, but I do question whether this bill gets us any further down the road than we already are. And I think if you flip through the bill, you sort of see what the bill really is. Page 3, we starting at A, we go through a whole list and we say, when we're talking about patterns of criminal street gang activity, we talk about violent felonies. It's already defined in law. We talk about promoting prostitution, already defined in law, already prohibited. Felony property destruction, already defined in law, already prohibited. Item after item after item for the next four or three pages, we go through and simply say, here are a list of things that we as a body have said are illegal and are criminal. But this time we really mean they're criminal. And that's really what this bill does. I mean, it's simply, I have not heard that prosecutors in our state lack the tools that they need to be able to deal with these activities. And, in fact, I think this bill is a good illustration of that, is it lists out all those things that we're concerned about, and it shows we've got them covered in statute. Let's not pass a statute that just makes us feel good when we've already got the tools out there.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't want to be redundant. The good speaker who just spoke hit some of my points as well. But we had the example earlier that we wanted to nip something in the bud, and I guess I don't understand. On page 3, so this really doesn't come into effect until 3 years down the road. The bud is now a full-grown rose, maybe even dying on the vine. And we've listed all of these, as the good speaker just said, that are already pretty egregious crimes. That obviously they can be caught and convicted of if that's what they're doing. So I don't see how this is nipping anything in the bud. And I see no need for it.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to answer one of the questions was, is intimidation defined or is it a law already? There is a law, actually. It's 65305. If you intimidate a witness, juror, or officer in the discharge of his duty, that's a felony. So intimidate is actually one of the crimes we already have. I just wanted to point that one out. I also wanted to go through sort of how this works. The last speaker, or I guess two speakers ago, was saying, well, we already have all these defined in law. These are already the law. We're not creating any new law. This is helping to define what a street gang is. And maybe we'll back up a little bit. Here's all that this bill's doing is on page one. On page one, you're guilty of intimidation in the furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang. And that's the crime, intimidation. If you do the following, if you threaten, you intimidate, and you have to use word or conduct, and that word or conduct, you're threatening to either cause physical injury to another person or damage to the property of another person, and all for the objective of furthering or assisting in the interests of your street gang. So let's say one of your members of your gang gets picked up on a crime. You want to make sure that that witness does not testify. So you say to that person, you testify against our member, we will break your window. So damage to the property of another. The second part of that is if I tried to solicit another person to participate would also be another element of the crime. That's the whole crime. That's it. Just it's the concept of intimidating others to not do something or to not testify. And the problem is that this is a common occurrence in two of our bigger cities, according to the testimony we received, that gang members routinely will intimidate witnesses not to participate in prosecutions. Now, why is the bill so long, then, if that's all we're trying to do? And this is why it gets long, is because the Constitution, there's been some constitutional challenges in other states, because other states, of course, have a much bigger problem with gangs than we do. So they have, it's not exactly like we're inventing the wheel here. There's quite a lot of other states that have gang statutes. Now, they go a lot further than us. There are some states where, and they've been successfully challenged, where they've said if you're five or more standing on a street, and clearly that goes too far. It violates your right to free association. So what we're trying to do with the remainder of the bill is to narrowly define what a gang is so that you're not constitutionally violating someone's right to free association, so that we don't call your local maybe you have a coffee club you get together with, that suddenly we don't term that as a criminal street gang. So we have to narrowly define what is a gang. So that's what we're doing there on page two. We're saying you have five or more people in your gang, and that you are you have a pattern of criminal street gang activity. That's in the definition of gang. Well, you have to go further now, because now you have to define what is a pattern of criminal street gang activity. So that gives you the definition on page three. So what they're saying there is, if of your five members, if you take your five members, if there have been two or more offenses within the last 3 years, so just look back the last 3 years, if there's been two or more offenses by one or all of your members of any of these types of crimes, then you were participating in gang activity. Now, just because you were participating in any of these gang activities in the last 2 years, you were convicted, that doesn't mean you're guilty of the crime. All that means is, yes, there was a pattern, So that goes back to the definition of gang. So yes, you are in a gang, but that goes back to the original. That's just one small element that it has to be a gang, that you were participating in a gang, but you still have to prove all the other elements that you were intimidating, that that intimidation was in the interest of word or conduct to cause injury or cause property damage in order to further the interests of the gang, and the interest of the gang being to keep you from talking. That's how that's supposed to work.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the definition of the laundry list and what is there. I was going to get up and talk a little bit about that, so I'm not going to talk about that. But those of you that have been here a while, you've probably heard me say this before. I know you've heard me say it before. Those of you that are new, this will be your first experience. And this is this. I look at this bill as an opportunity for us to be a proactive body, to get ahead of the curve, instead of waiting until we have to be reactive to a situation that's got out of control. So I stand in favor of this bill, because I think it's the right thing to do, to stay proactive, something that we sometimes find difficult to do in this body.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I have a question for the bringers of the bill or the chair of the committee about how does this bill fit in with our already existing conspiracy statutes? We already have in 61303 that a person is guilty of conspiracy to commit a crime if he agrees with one or more persons that they or one or more of them will commit a crime, and that one or more of them does an overt act to affect the objective of the agreement. So it seems to me we already have the crime of conspiracy in the law, and if I'm reading it correctly, this bill is only about a conspiracy to further the gang, not really the crimes that we're trying to prevent. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in support of the bill. Why would we not want to criminalize this activity when someone can threaten the safety of your person or damage your property for promoting something that furthers criminal activity? Why not? We're protecting the Wyoming citizens from this activity. I don't think we're taking any steps that we haven't taken before. When you look into even what it takes to be defined as a criminal street gang, intimidation's in there. Page 4, lines 4 through 6. That's against jurors, witnesses, and officers of the court. We protect them. Let's protect our youth. I support the bill.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I think the reason why not is because we already do. I thought it was interesting, the discussion, that this whole bill really gets about intimidation, and I understand that it's because there have been witnesses intimidated in proceedings in some of the communities in our state, and yet we have 65305, which the title is, it precludes influencing, intimidating, or impeding witnesses. And the penalties in that provision are greater than they are in this statute. So, again, I get back to the point that we have the tools in place. It's not about being responsive or proactive. We have been proactive. This is recognizing that we've been proactive and that the prosecutors have the tools in place to be able to fight exactly what this bill is aimed at.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was a question about conspiracy. The bill has nothing to do with conspiracy. Conspiracy is a separate and distinct crime. This bill deals solely with the concept of intimidation. And actually, more on point than conspiracy is the point that was just made by the last speaker. And that's something we did talk about in committee, is that there is this other crime of intimidation against witnesses, jurors, and officers conducting their duties. And the testimony that we received from, and particularly from the DA from, the city we're not in, but it's bigger, maybe it's smaller. I don't know which one's bigger. Anyway, that DA testified that the present intimidation statute does not cover all elements that he wishes he could, because in particularly the present law of intimidation witnesses, the argument can be made that it needs to be a current case that is ongoing, that those are witnesses that are being called by the prosecution. So the example used more in committee was, what if there is no current criminal case ongoing, that it's just an ongoing intimidation? Maybe there's someone elderly in that neighborhood, and they're told, you don't call the cops, you look the other way, we're going to continue to do what we're doing. It's that type of activity that the prosecutor, at least from that city, was talking about getting at.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to expand on the comments of the good chairman of the Judiciary Committee, we protect, as a matter of public policy, jurors, witnesses, or officers in a trial, in the discharge of their duties. And that's protecting the criminal process. But what in the intimidation statute protects our school students? Says to them, if you say something to anybody, to the principal, that I'm dealing drugs out of the bathroom of this school, I'm going to knife you. Or my buddy's dealing drugs out of the bathroom of this school, I'm going to knife you. There is no protection in our statutes for that. And it's the students in our schools that I think makes this legislation an important tool. Because for grown-up adults who are jurors and witnesses and officers, we protect them. But for the very same thing in different situations, particularly in the school environment, there is no such protection. And we need to have that protection, and that's why I think this piece of legislation is important.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To echo those thoughts, of course we're doing this for our kids. And some of the evolution of this bill, when I first started looking into it, was in reference to the tools in the toolbox. Law enforcement and our attorneys were approaching me, citing very real examples of what's happening in our schools, and happened in a school in my county where gang banging activity was occurring, drive-by shootings were and are happening, when in fact some of our students knew about this, and they were afraid to come forward because there were consequences, they thought, because they were being intimidated. They were saying, okay, here's the deal. If you say anything to anybody, this is what will happen to you. The same thing, the actions that they were trying to hide would be brought to bear against them. This, when I found out about this type of activity, this clearly is what compelled me to, and all of us, to bring this issue to the forefront.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill is a little more complicated than first meets the eye. And so let's take a look at what's going on here. We're talking about intimidation in furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang. Then, on page 2, starting at line 18, we define what is a criminal street gang. And in that definition of criminal street gang, we ascribe to them engaging in a pattern of criminal street gang activity. And then beginning on page 3 at line 4, we define that term. What do we mean by pattern of criminal street gang activity? And it says, so it's a tiered thing that goes down, and then we get to the laundry list, which says offenses that form a pattern of criminal street gang activity include, and then we go through all these existing statutes. So what are we doing here? We're talking about a newly defined criminal offense of intimidation in furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang. The rest of the statute concerns two things. Number one, how are we going to determine when there's a criminal street gang and what's the penalty going to be? When we talk about what's a criminal street gang, then we have to, that begs the question, well, what's a pattern of criminal street gang activity? So when we get all done, I think this conversation started with the statement, well, I like simple crimes and simple solutions. And it is a simple crime and a simple solution. And I would submit that intimidation is, in fact, the ultimate criminal achievement. And if a criminal can intimidate somebody into a pattern of activity, then they don't have to go any further. And if that were the case, there probably wouldn't be much crime, except the crime of intimidation. That's all that would be required. But what is that in the end? That's anarchy. And when sufficient intimidation exists on a large enough scale, then you have anarchy. You have a total breakdown of the system. So I just urge you, let's not lose sight of what we're doing. We're talking about intimidation, the ultimate criminal achievement. I know it's not simple to define. It's not necessarily a simple solution, but really when you boil it down to the end, it's pretty easy. We're talking about making intimidation in furtherance of a criminal street gang a criminal offense. And that's all it is. All the rest of it is simply definitional because it keeps begging the question, well, what's a criminal street gang? Well, a criminal street gang is a group of people that engages in a pattern of gang activity. Well, what's a pattern of gang activity? Well, it's doing two or more of these lesser included things that fit in the definition. But in the end, it's intimidation. And if we can't outlaw that, we can't stop anarchy in this country. So I urge you to vote in favor of this.
Representative Bagby.
Madam Chairwoman, I appreciate the debate and call for the question.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 20 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 71. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 71, introduced by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to workers' compensation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bagby, Barbudo, Blickrey, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 71 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. In order for me to explain the Standing Committee Amendment, I have to explain a little bit of the bill, so I don't mean to steal the thunder of the sponsor, but let me just start with this is an issue that our committee had not really realized was an issue, and then once it was explained to us, we realized what an important issue this is, and it actually, this was an extremely good bill. However, the mechanism by which the sponsor went about, we discovered, may not actually solve the issue. So this is where it gets interesting. Our amendment essentially deletes the bill. Most of the bill is deleted. So really what the entire bill becomes is one sentence. And you'll find that on the Standing Committee Amendment, and it's that sentence added there, notwithstanding the Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act, any final judgment of the district court upon petition for review shall be reviewed by the Supreme Court only upon writ of certiorari pursuant to the Wyoming Rules of Appellate Procedure. So this whole bill has been narrowed down to one sentence. And just to explain this real quick, here's what happens with a workers' comp case. So you file, they say no, Or it could be the other way, actually. They could say yes, and you as the employer files an appeal. So it can be either the employee that files the appeal, the employer. You go to an administrative hearing. At that administrative hearing, they make a decision. You then, if you don't like that decision, either, and actually it can be one of three people, the state could appeal up to district court, the employer can appeal up to district court, or the employee can go up to district court. They get up to district court. The district court looks at it, makes the decision. Then if you don't like that decision, then you get to go to the Supreme Court. The problem is that the Supreme Court does not take deference of what the district court said. So all this did was just stick an extra, step in the way of resolution. So what we're saying here in this one sentence is you will appeal your decision, hearing examiner decision to the district court, and then that's the final decision, district court, unless you file a writ with the Supreme Court and they choose by their discretion, and there's a good amendment coming on the Committee of the Whole that makes that even more clear, that they do it on their discretion, because what the testimony was that we got from the Supreme Court was these are essentially always the same case. There's not always a lot of new law, but because, and this is, and the good sponsor of this bill pointed this out very well, the problem probably in our system is we pay for the attorney. And so they keep appealing up and up and up. And so every case, moves on up to the Supreme Court when in some situations maybe it shouldn't have been appealed. And so we're tying up the courts and we're delaying justice for either the employer or the employee. So that's the standing committee amendment. It's just one sentence. And I'll stop at that point.
Discussion on the amendment. You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We have a committee of the whole amendment. Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move committee of the whole amendment number one to House Bill 71. That simply adds a sentence to the end of the standing committee amendment language, adds another sentence that says, granting of a petition is within the discretion of the Supreme Court. The reason I've done that is in the rules of appellate procedure, which are in this book, I'm sure you've all read it from cover to cover. In the rules of appellate procedure, with respect to writs of certiorari, the last sentence in Rule 13.01A says, granting of a petition is within the discretion of the Supreme Court. I have a little bit of concern, or I have a little bit of concern, that with the standing committee amendment, someone would say, well, I filed a writ of certiorari with the Supreme Court, therefore I'm entitled to have a review by the Supreme Court. And that's not what works, what's typically done when you have an intermediate court of appeals, which is what we're talking about. And most states and the federal system have an intermediate court of appeals. It's a three-tier system. You get the trial at the first level. You get a review of the application of the law to the facts at the second level. And at the third level, you get a review of that review if the Supreme Court feels that a mistake was made. Now, in many instances, the Supreme Court concludes that no mistake was made, and they deny certiorari. And you see that quite often. Where, especially in the federal system, where system decisions out of the circuit courts are appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court denies cert. When they deny cert, they're simply saying, we see nothing in the at the appellant court level that was done incorrectly, so we just are not going to review the case. And that did not, to me, seem clear in the standing committee amendment, so I'm asking to add to the Standing Committee Amendment, the extra sentence, which is in the Rules of Appellate Procedure, that says granting of a petition is within the discretion of the Supreme Court. In other words, they may grant it and hear the appeal, or they can deny it, in which case the decision of the district court stands.
Discussion on the amendment. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. It's a good bill, and if you have any questions about it, I'd be happy to answer them or have any number of the multitude of attorneys lined up on this bill to answer them for you as well. Thanks.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, I just want to make one other comment. Other speakers did a great job of illustrating the good impact that this bill has on sort of the procedural posture, and I want to thank the good representative from Laramie County for bringing the bill and recognizing this problem. The one other issue that it really addresses, though, is as we look is recognizing where those attorney's fees come out of when the cases are working their way up through the process, and those come out of the workers' comp fund. And so, you know, we have historically in this body struggled with making sure we've got enough premiums coming in to cover the payment of benefits going out. Well, you have a good chunk of that fund, or a significant portion of that fund, being paid out for meaningless appeals, really. I mean, as a claimant, if I lose it anyway along the process, I would be a fool not to appeal it up because I know that the workers' comp fund is going to pay those attorney's fees. So not only does this sort of clear up the procedural logjam that exists because of the way the system is right now, but I think it makes certain that we are wise stewards of those workers' comp funds and those resources.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 71 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 71 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, next is House Joint Resolution 8, and then move 50 down to the bottom of the list. And before you do that, I'm going to add a few more, too, but 50 will go to the bottom. After 101, we'll do House Bill 18, then 67, 15, and 109, and then 50 will go to the very, very end.
Thank you. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 8. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution Number 8 being introduced by Representative Davison. A joint resolution requesting Congress to oppose House Resolution 980, titled the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended to do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. No, Connolly, excused, Childers. Signed, Representative Brown, Vice Chair.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Davison.
Thank you. I move House Resolution Number 8, and this bill is to oppose. Oh,
Chairman
sorry
Childers.
About that.
Chairman Childers.
Excuse me, I'll sleep at the wheel. Actually, my vice chair should have been up there, but I'll let it get on. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill Number House Joint Resolution 8 do pass, and I'll turn it over to the good representative from the southeastern part or southwestern part of the state to carry the bill.
Chairman Childers, would you like to discuss the Standing Committee amendment?
I also move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to H.J. 8, and she will also explain that.
Representative Davison.
Thank you. Okay. The amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment, or excuse me, Standing Committee Amendment, what it does is add, on page 2, it adds language that says that the congressional delegation representing a state heavily impacted by the proposed wilderness expansion is not on record in support of the designation. And then on line 10, it adds, whereas the United States Congress does not customarily make wilderness designations without first seeking concurrence with the states affected. And this is a friendly amendment, so I'd ask your yes, I vote on it.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Davison.
What this bill does is just send a message to Congress that we oppose the expansion of the ecosystem of the Rocky Mountain. And it would be expanded by 6 million acres. Right now, Wyoming has the highest percentage of wilderness area in the United States. And if you refer to the map that's on your desk, you'll see that the existing light green is existing wilderness. The dark green is what they plan to expand. So I would just ask your yes vote on this to oppose this expansion.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In considering one of the earlier resolutions a few days ago, someone mentioned how it was important that the statements made be true, and I agree with that. I thought the Standing Committee Amendment passed that test. I was curious about, on page 1, on lines 11 and 12, what evidence there was that the proposal had unsuitable land in it or land that was failed to meet the wilderness criteria. What was it that the committee heard that verified those statements?
I would refer to Representative Brown to answer that.
Chairman Childers?
Just a minute.
He's not.
Representative Brown?
Madam Chairman, I understand the question to be, why should these lands not be included as wilderness? All the lands that are in green. Just the new addition. Well, why wouldn't we put the new Well, Madam Chairman, I'm getting signals from the chairman of the Travel, Recreation, and Cultural Resources Committee.
Madam Chair, I lost
Chairman Childers.
When I saw the shock waves coming off the front of this room from the back of the good representatives from the southern part of the state. But I believe I can answer some of that question, if I may.
Please proceed.
Well, Madam Chair, there's two things about this, and in particular, the thing that's disturbing to me is Congress passed a law in 1969 that in particular set up a system to cover restricted use of the lands, which allows public involvement. And, of course, that is the National Environmental Policy Act. In my opinion, that's a super violation of that. However, Congress does have the right to do that. There was a discussion when the Wilderness Act was passed according to some former senators that were there when the Wilderness Act was passed, that Wyoming was not supposed to have any more wilderness. But even so, if Congress can do this, the big opposition to it is this is a person in New York City that has no idea about our properties around here other than what somebody told them that doesn't really represent what the majority of the people in this state mean, want out of the lands, and in particular in Wyoming, to allow her to have this proposal to create the wilderness. I mean, that's beating around the bush, but quite frankly, that's the answer. That's why we're opposing it, and we don't think it's right.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't really answer the good representative's question. However, I do know that this is such an extensive bill that, it adds so much to wilderness that even if you were prone to vote in favor of wilderness or in certain situations, I think this would create such a backlash that it would be detrimental to adding any wilderness in the future. One interesting point is that it includes in the dark green Yellowstone National Park, and I don't think you're allowed to drive around in the wilderness and stuff, and so it would change Yellowstone National Park quite a lot. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I'd like to throw the question back that was asked by the good representative from Sheridan County, and that is where did they put their criteria that they used to show that it was suitable for additional wilderness? I haven't seen anything either on either side of that question. This all of a sudden, this just popped up, and they wanted to make some more wilderness. Now, whether it was for grizzly bears or wolves or whatever it is, I have no idea. But my argument back, I guess, would be I'd like to see what they chose to say that it was suitable.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and being on the TRLW committee, hopefully I can try to answer the good chair of Labor's question. We did hear some testimony about the wilderness area that is designated on this map being unsuitable and failed to meet the criteria of wilderness because it is being used for multiple use now. If it's designated as wilderness, the scope of use is narrowed down significantly, and the restrictions on environmental restrictions are really heavily increased. And so it failed to meet that in my mind because of the multiple use that's being used on the lands now. I didn't answer that very great, but I hope that helps.
Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I agree that it's onerous to have somebody from back east dictate wilderness area to us. I think that we all appreciate that should be a local initiative. And there is such an initiative up in our part of the state, as a matter of fact, by quite a number of local people who are interested in setting aside an addition to the Cloud Peak Wilderness. I did see that even that was included in this part, which surprised me a little bit. I'm not sure how much a resolution like this gets paid attention to, but I think it is important that it be a true statement. And I did look at another area up in the part of the Bighorn Mountains that I am familiar with that I was very surprised to see would be included in this. But it's part of the area when the Bighorn Mountains came up, they raise the sedimentary rock at a real steep angle on both sides. So I know for a fact that a large part that they put in here on the northern part of the Bighorns has no roads. It is a very steep area that's not suitable for grazing. Whether or not there's minerals there is doubtful, seeing that it's almost down to the granite that is exposed. And there's no timber harvest had gone into there. In fact, we had a wildfire along part of it above a good representative from the Bighorn area, actually closer to her place. And it wasn't even, you had to wait until the fire left the area to even be able to fight it. But this one part, another part that really bothers me is on page two, line eight, where it says a continuance of multiple use activities, including motorized recreation. Well, this area, there isn't any. Outfitting, that could happen. Grazing, there isn't any. Timber harvest, there isn't any. Energy development, there isn't any. You know, that these are crucial to the long-term economic diversity of Wyoming. Well, we happen to have another law in this state that I view as kind of a silly law that has to do with outfitting. And this would actually benefit outfitting to have this wilderness designation, because in the state of Wyoming, if you're from out of state and choose to hunt in a wilderness area, you have to have an outfitter. Well, for some reason, all people from out of state, automatically, as soon as they come into Wyoming and go into a wilderness area, they get lost. And they're totally incapable of hunting and helping themselves. And somehow Wyoming people have that. And that's another law that we need to look at. But outfitting actually, wilderness area actually benefits the use of outfitting in the state. So I just found this an angry statement. I share the anger in somebody else coming in and telling us what to do, but this seemed to be to have so many inconsistencies with fact in it that I wanted to point it out that I just don't think that we'll accomplish much at all with this proposition. So on and against this resolution.
Further discussion on the bill? Representative Davison?
I would call for the question.
Question having been called, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 8 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. A House Joint Resolution Number 8 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 58. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 58, introduced by Representative Anderson, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding homestead exemption county option. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Anderson, Edmonds, Escobel, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Wallace. Signed, Representative Anderson, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Anderson?
Rises to report that I do so with a recommendation that House Bill 58 do pass. This, I'm sure, is an old friend to many of you. We have homestead exemption laws on our books for homestead exemption in the state. It's never been funded since we've had it in or since I've been in the legislature, which is since the state became a state. But this is a county option. Some of the counties have come to us wanting a county option. It's much the same plan. They have to live so long in the county. And if you'll read the fiscal note, it's no fiscal impact upon state coffers, much like the Homestead Exemption Act would be if we funded it for the state. But it's all county funds. It does not affect the school portion of those funds. Does not accept any affect any of the special districts. but only county funds. And it's up to the county commissioners to institute it, and they have to go through the Department of Revenue to be sure everything's in line, and they can start it then, and they have to look at it if there's a petition of so many people in the county that ask for it. And it'll amount to about $300 on residents that have lived there for 3 years or more, $4,400 against the assessed valuation of that home, and that would be the limit. If there are any further questions, there are no standing committee amendments. I'm sure there's some comments, and we'd be glad to take those this time.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just like to add what the good chairman said, that this is House Bill 58 is a good tool for our counties. As we all know, the boom and bust cycles that we have in Wyoming starts out with a discovery of a little gas, and then you have hundreds of people coming to your community, your real estate prices go skyrocketing, and then your property taxes go through the roof. At the same time, your coffers are, county coffers are filling up with money, and but at the same point, you're actually pricing, you're taxing out some of your citizens. You're taxing out people on a fixed income, some young families, and you're actually taxing out the people that, the workers that are supporting, you know, the mineral development within your county and providing this money. House Bill 58 would allow these severely impacted communities to give a justifiable and needed tax break, tax relief to their citizens. It allows the counties to fund this property tax relief, not the state. And it outlines eligible limits and everything. It's also set up on a year-to-year basis, so it's easy to remove. The county can't afford to do it. But this homestead exemption being funded by the counties would not affect, as good chairman says, any state revenue or school funding. And it does not raise the taxes on any mineral development either. And I think one of the main reasons that this would really help our state is that it supplies for a stable workforce. It doesn't price these workers out. And so it's good for industry, which is the driving engine of our economy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to first of all say that we've had a lot of different tax relief proposals come before this body in the form of constitutional amendments and others to address the concern that we all have relative to very high assessed values of residential property throughout Wyoming. And I'm concerned about that, but I'm more concerned about going into our tax code and carving out exceptions like what's being proposed here in this bill. This is the first time in my memory where we've tried to do something like that without providing, you know, our means test that we have for several of the different property tax relief and refund programs currently on the books. Those are all means tested. Of course, the exception to that is the veterans, which is not means tested. We just decided that was something that we wanted to do, and it was the right thing to do. But it covers all 23 counties. This proposal provides an option for any counties who would choose to do it to be able to do that, and other counties who aren't in the position to do that aren't able to do that. So I do have some concerns about that. Basically, what this would do would, in the 9.5% assessment on real property, what we end up doing in these counties who opt in is we lower that percentage that they have for the rate on their assessed property. If you're in the next county, you know, you'll pay the full 9.5% on the assessed, but if you are in one of these opt-in counties to this proposal, then you get to pay a
a lower rate. Effectively, that's what it does by reducing the $4,400 in assessed value. There's some constitutional questions with that, I believe. Our Constitution requires that we have a uniform and fair tax policy, and this really drives that into an area of some question. So I do really have some concerns about that. The other question I have in terms of details of the bill, counties, taxpayers in counties who opt into this county option, do those taxpayers, are they able to receive the other tax relief programs that we have in the state? I can't really see it in the bill. I just, you know, we oftentimes refer to that kind of as double dipping, and I'm not sure, so I need that answered. And I would like to just cover the constitutional question and a little bit on the something in this current statutes. Now I think that you might not agree with, but in 3913.102, it says the County Board of Equalization, which is essentially the County Board of Commissioners, has no power to and shall not set tax policy or engage in administrative duties concerning assessments. This, if that's not what this is, it's awful close to it. And then finally, Madam Chairman, there's three things I want to mention with respect to the constitutional question. The Constitution provides that the law may exempt from taxation such other properties as the legislature by general law provide. The question becomes whether a statute which allows each county to decide whether certain properties exempt would qualify as a general law. I'm not sure about that. The second thing is, in addition to that provision, the legislature is prohibited from enacting special legislation. The Wyoming Constitution provides in part that the legislation shall not pass local or special laws exempting property from taxation. This is, in essence, exempting property from taxation when you allow for that kind of a rebate. So, again, I'm sympathetic to the problem, but I'm also more concerned about some adjectives that come to mind that we talk about sometimes on this floor. It has to do with slippery slope. It has to do with the camel's nose under the tent. It has to do with unintended consequences. And it has to do with cost shifting. This is a cost shifting. Minerals in this state pay 80% of our, they carry the burden of 80% of our tax rate. Anytime we take that burden away from property owners, we shift that to industry, which is already carrying. But probably the most important to me is simply a step towards inequality in our tax code, and I'm not sure I want to go there. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I certainly would urge caution on this bill. We are putting our county commissioners in a very difficult position. The commissioners from the center of the state join other commissioners that are struggling to find money to fund basic services without laying off employees or cutting services. This bill allows the taxpayer to apply for tax rebate, which takes money from the county budgets. This puts commissioners in the position of not being able to budget with any kind of security. Even though it is a local option, it makes it difficult for counties to say no. Seems to me that it would be better to keep our people employed rather than giving rebates. Thank you.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, why do we think that the state isn't going to get involved? Looks to me like if I live in a county and I ask for a homestead exemption and the county commissioners grant it, but then they run out of money, where do they go? They come right to the uncle state and try to ask for more money. I think this is a poor piece of legislation to give, as the good chairman of the Agricultural Committee said, it is certainly a slippery slope. I think it's dangerous to go where we're trying to tread. The county commissioners, as the good lady from House District 36 said, the county commissioners are hard-pressed to do what they need to do in the first place. We've cut back on funds that are going to cities and counties. I just think this is not right at this time, as much as it would be nice to be able to give homestead exemptions. It's not the right thing to do today.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. That's the very reasons we need to bring bills like this to this body, so that they will be discussed. They are now up to you to decide what's the best route to go. All those things that have been said are relevant, except the county doesn't have any money, they won't do it. That's pretty simple on that angle of it. It is up to the commissioners. So those that testified in the committee, commissioners, supported the bill. Those mineral people that were in the committee, that in essence are helping pay the bills in those counties that have a possibility of using it, supported the bill. They said it helped their workers. It helped the inflated prices that they have caused because of the development and the increase in population. And I think most of the committee felt right to bring it out on the floor, get it debated, and your people are the ones that are going to decide where this thing goes.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, it would just seem to me that right now, if the tax base and the tax situation in a particular county is such that the commissioners feel that some type of property tax holiday is warranted, to me it would just simply be a matter of they just don't have to assess the full 12 mills. So it seems to me that they've already got some authority to provide a tax holiday if they feel that they've got adequate revenues to properly do what they need to do and at the same time just not assess their full 12 mills, Madam Chairman.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to address a few of these questions. One is, if there is already a homestead exemption statewide, then this would no longer be a county option. It wouldn't come into play. As far as the equality of taxation, it is a question. I do have a memo from the Attorney General, and I quote, the legislature is given fairly broad powers in granting exemptions to taxation. Later on it says, this proposed legislation, this was a review of this bill, is in this instance would be applicable to all counties equally. So the option is equal all along, and the assessed value of people's home is not going to change. So all counties have a chance to enact this homestead exemption. And it also says that there's no case in point which would provide information as to how the court may rule on this. So it leaves it up to us, basically, the way I see it. Getting back to the mineral question, the mineral industry in my county and in the committee supports this thing. It does help them. It doesn't charge them any money at all. The commissioners, with the problem of the commissioners having problems, if there's, as the good chairman spoke earlier, if they don't have the money, which is easy to figure out, then they just can't do it. So it's pretty easy. And as far as the raising the mills, if you are a mineral-rich county and you raise your mills, lower your mills, you're losing the revenue from this mineral production, so it just wouldn't make any sense. I think the state needs this. It would certain parts of the state need this, and it's a tool that we probably won't use that often, but when we do need it, it's desperately needed. And it could change. It's not just the counties that have mineral production now. It could be wind power could create a boom situation in the future. It also could you could discover some mineral lithium brine in yours, and all of a sudden your county is booming away, and you need this relief to maintain your county and your workforce. Thank you.
Chairman Anderson.
The other question that arose is the commonly referred to as the double dipping. I think those other statutes have that in them, but if indeed this makes it to a second reading, we'll bring an amendment so that you'll have your choice of which one of these options you want to take on those and prevent the double dipping on the property tax reliefs.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 58 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill, having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blickrey.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Bird.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen excused. Kimball.
Aye.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubno. Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp excused. Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters. Thompson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 19 ayes, 38 noes, 3 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 58, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration.
Madam Chairman.
Excuse me, yes. Chairman McComey.
May I ask privilege of the floor?
Please.
Ladies and gentlemen of the House 60th, I believe, we have in the balcony with us members of the boards of trustees of all 7 of our community colleges. And I'd like to have them stand and be recognized. Northern Wyoming Community College, Central Wyoming Community College, Laramie County Community College, Western Wyoming Community College, Casper College, Northwest College, and Eastern Wyoming College. Yay!
Welcome to the House.
And, Madam Chairman, I'd like to say they do a heck of a job.
I would echo that, Chairman McComey. Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 101. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 101, introduced by Representative Anderson, an act relating to taxation and revenue, electricity generated from wind taxation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Anderson, Escobel, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson. No, Edmund Semlick, Wallace. Signed, Representative Anderson, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Win 101 do pass. And there is a standing committee amendment, and I move standing committee amendment number one to House Bill 101. If you think the last bill created a little controversy, you should have sat in on this one. Let me preface my remarks by two kinds of things that we, philosophies we have on some of these bills. My lobbyists that I admire and consider a great deal of help think that these bills should go to a study and then a bill. My thinking is we ought to put a bill with a future date and then study it so that we have something that forces everybody to the table and gets this discussion going. So this amendment number one does two things. It was two amendments in the committee. It's now one amendment, and if you want them split, we can certainly do that. But the one amendment that I think is critical is moving the date from 2011 to 2012. That gives 2 years before it goes into effect, and it gives one more legislative session so that we have time to try to figure out what's fair, what's right, what ought to be done, what ought not to be done. And that's, in other words, we're asking for a comprehensive study on wind taxation all the way from property tax, sales tax, energy tax, the whole ball of wax that will be studied in the interim one way or the other. So that's, and the other part of that amendment is we reduced the $3 per megawatt to $1 a megawatt, and will not go into effect until the generators had generated electricity for 3 years. So they would be taxed on their fourth year of production only. So with that, if there's no comments on the amendment, I would ask for the question.
Our comments on the amendment, Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question in regards to the new subsection B. It reads, no tax shall be imposed upon electricity which is produced from a wind turbine for the first 3 years after the wind turbine begins producing energy for sale or trade. And then you're switching the effective date from 2011 to 2012. I'm not really good at math, but let me give you a hypothetical, and you can explain to me how I'm supposed to read this. So let's say I started producing in 2009, actually, that maybe I just built my wind turbine last year. It's been producing since 2009. When 2012 rolls around, do I start paying, or do I wait for 3 years beyond 2012, so really 2015? And maybe the better example, let's say I just start producing in 2011, so next year, and then it goes into effect 2012, and then 3 years later, 2014. I'm just curious, when do you start counting the 3 years? On the date of the effective date of the bill, or when I actually started producing? So on the effective date, will some people automatically start paying?
I think only an attorney could read it any other way. It says that 3 years after production starts, and the bill is in effect, you start paying.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just pose a question for thought, which
can either be a part of the amendment or a part of the bill after the amendment, which I support. And that is that you've put in a statutory figure that started off with a dollar, and now you're suggesting that it be $3. As the value of the kilowatt moves over a period of time, is the legislature going to be in a position to have that figure follow the value, or should it not? If it's not, why, I suppose leaving it legislative would be the one course. If we feel that it should, and I'm not positive about the value, I understand it's about $60 for a kilowatt hour. 5% of that would be about $3. So that might be satisfactory for dealing in the future. So I just pose that as an issue relative to the amendment to consider either now or in the bill itself. Thank you.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. And that's the reason we've got a year to study it, to try to implement those things that make sense, tie it to other things. There's all kinds of ideas coming out, and that's one reason I encourage it to get out on the floor and even go further so that we get more people thinking about this, the problems that can arise, the avenues we can take to make it to promote the wind energy, but by the same token, take care of the local governments. And so we thank you for those inputs, and we want to consider those as we go along when we can make a comprehensive study of this whole situation.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, thank you for this opportunity. This, again, is an important issue in my district, my county. And two words here, political courage. Don't be afraid. We can talk about this, and in my conversations with all of you in the last interim and through my appointment on the task force, I don't think I know of anyone that hasn't given this a lot of thought and consideration, and I don't feel unable to stand up here and say that I supported the bill's original intent, and I'm here to say to resist this amendment, to say that, you know, it's probably not a fair statement that this amendment guts the bill, but it does weaken it considerably, and I would urge you to stand firm and resist this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a concern about putting in the dollar amount, reducing it to $3 to $1, and then saying, well, we'll study it, and then trying to raise that back up. My experience, that doesn't happen. And I'd rather see nothing, no mention of any money prior to the study, so then once you did the study, you could then talk about the amount of money that you'd want to do, the percentage that the good gentleman from the county of Sheridan mentioned, or this type of thing. The study, probably, you know, to see how things go. I don't know about that, and I really didn't hear the testimony on why they should be able to produce for 3 years before we start charging them for it. So I guess maybe I'd like a little more enlightenment about that conversation. Also, I'm not real comfortable with the amendment as it stands.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I just have one question. If we're not going to tax them for a year or so, then why are we in such a big hurry of trying to get a bill through? If we're not going to tax them, let's work on the bill in the interim. Let's make it happen. Let's do the right thing. And then come back next year, and if in the interim, we've studied it, we've had hearings, we've had all kinds of good stuff during the year, and it warrants it, that's fine. But I don't understand why we're intent in pushing a bill through, but the tax doesn't go into effect for a while.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Not to be redundant, but ditto. I think that if we need a tax in 3 years' time, We're going to be back here three more times before then. We can do something about it then. We heard testimony that essentially there was no logic, science, or data behind setting the tax at $3, and no logic, science, or data behind lowering it to $1. So if we don't have the data or the science to determine what's fair for this industry, I think the better course, the responsible course, is to study it and come back when we know what the case is. We heard testimony that there's an enormous existing tax burden in the first few years in the startup phase. Property taxes and sales tax exemptions, which are expiring. And I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense to sit down with the industry over the interim, perhaps figure out how we might be able to levelize those things so that the counties and the general fund, quite frankly, have the appropriate, and the industry has the appropriate participation. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the bill, neutral on the Standing Committee amendment. You know, if you want them to push this a little faster along, vote no on the Standing Committee amendment, and we'll we passed that.
No, we are on the Standing Committee amendment.
We are.
Standing Committee amendment number one.
Okay, so again, I'll leave that up to the body whether they want to vote for it or against it. But for the bill, the fine comment from the gentleman from Sheridan County about, you know, not setting an exact dollar amount, I think is a very valid argument. In committee, we heard from a lot of the ranchers that they're negotiating 4 to 6% royalties on the wind power electricity generated from this. The $3 rate per megawatt hour is something substantially less than that, I believe. But I'd almost like to see it as a percent of what the energy is sold for at some point where it gets sold in wherever down the wire it goes and gets sold for this green energy. Again, these companies that are doing this get some big tax breaks on the federal level doing this. They've gotten some tax breaks in the past locally on this. And, you know, again, for Wyoming to put up with seeing these wind turbines scattered around the state, I think it's our wind, and I think we should reap a little of the benefit and the revenue from that wind. So on and for the bill, and I encourage you to vote for it.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am really glad to see the good work of the committee, and I know that both committees have dealt extensively with this, and all of us on the floor have not heard the arguments. I do know the one thing is that, in general, the state is very excited about the prospect of the development of this particular source of energy and contributing to the nation and its energy basket. I also know that with this complicated issue, there are many factors. As I look at this amendment, personally, I see three separate factors, and the one that concerns me is the double delay. And for that reason, Madam Chairman, I would advocate that I would move that we divide it, the amendment, between lines 11 and 12. And what that would do, if you find it divisible, is it would take the year of 2012 and move it. What I would hope is that if we defeat that part of the division, if you find that acceptable, that we would return to the original 2011 date for the start, when the clock starts ticking, rather than, in essence, this almost makes it a four-year delay.
We're checking to make sure this is divisible. We're ruling that the amendment is divisible. All those in favor of? No. We just divide. Please continue, Representative Hammonds.
Well,
Chairman, I would ask then that the bottom division, the lines 12 through 16, that would be the portion that we discuss at this point, and the chair can call it division, whichever number they would choose.
But we'll call that division 1 and the remainder of the amendment division 2. Are you proceeding with discussion on the division 1?
Yes, if I may.
Please.
It's my understanding that from the business's perspective and from the people involved that as they go and they gather the finances in order to move forward with these projects, that the most critical issue for them is not only finding the funding and putting that together, but a predictability. And I think that if there is consensus in this body at this point that this is the general direction that we want to go, that we certainly are capable of deciding that a year from now, in 2011, that is in essence when we have decided that this would begin. And for that reason, I would advocate that we vote against the amendment, which has moved it to the date of 2012, at which point it would begin. I think 2011 is adequate.
We are discussing Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment 1. Representative Peterson? No? For the discussion, Chairman Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I resist this amendment because it's January 1st, 2011, and it will not give the legislature another chance to meet before it goes into effect. And we need at least one more legislative session. The objective, as far as I'm concerned, is to study this program, to get one that's fair and equitable and all the rest. And the reason for the bill was two different philosophies. Well, some of you say we ought to study then pass the bill along with the lobbyists. I say let's pass a bill, put a future date on it, then we're forced to study it and change those things on those things. We know it's reality and it's coming. I see so often the excuse, study a bill. That's another way of killing it. If you can't do it that way, it's unconstitutional. And if you can't do it that way, well, then try twisting some arms some other way. So I think it's just a sure thing that we have to study. So I think this is the most important, to me at least, part of the whole bill is to change that date so that we have at least one more legislative session before it goes into effect.
Further discussion on Division 1, Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I too would urge an aye vote on this bill. The argument was given to vote against it to provide some expectation of what things are going to be like. But actually, I think if you vote against this, it will harm a company's ability to know what to expect, because this will kick in 2011 in January. And a legislative session will happen after that. So I think that it is prudent to put this off until 2012. So I'd urge the body to vote aye on this division.
And I vote would make let's get this straight.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
Tell me what an aye vote will do, and then I won't have to discuss it.
Such power.
Yes, I vote we'll do the amendment like it stands.
Right. If you vote in favor of Division 1, you are supporting the amendment as it stands. And Division 1 of amendment of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is lines 12 through 17. And I vote upholds that portion of the amendment, and no vote defeats it. Further discussion on the amendment, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize to the good representative from House District 10, because yet here's another attorney asking this question, but I thought it was a good question. And on this division, I read this two different ways. The first way I thought it worked would be that prior to 2012, let's say, if the amendment passes. Prior to that, you could have a turbine producing for 3 years, and let's say it was already in existence now even, then when 2012 hit, it would automatically start, the tax would apply to that. But the problem with that, reading it that way, I think, is that if you apply this amendment, this division to the bill, the act itself doesn't apply to produced electricity until it would be January 1st, 2012. So then the other way I look at it would be that we wouldn't see any tax revenue from any turbine until 2015. And I don't know, I need help with understanding exactly what this means, because I can read it two different ways. But the latter seems to be the more logical, because the act itself does not apply until 2012, which gives us 2015.
All right, I apologize, because I don't read it like an attorney.
What
we meant is to give those turbines a cash flow, a three-year cash flow, before they had to start paying the tax. And those that have been in force for 3 years, when the bill becomes effective, if they have produced electricity for 3 years, they've had that cash flow, and dollar megawatt would be due then if that holds. If that dollar holds, or we have a different formula or whatever on it.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Voting on and for Amendment Number 1 to retain in there. You people in the Revenue Committee have heard a lot of the arguments. Most of us on the floor of the House have not, and I would certainly not want us to flop back to 2001, where we don't have a session between now and the time that tax rolls out. So I'd urge your support of Amendment Number 1.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Folks, procedurally, let's follow the rules, especially when it gets into a good debate. We need to follow the procedural rules of addressing the chair and not just blurting things out. So I would appreciate that. I agree with the majority floor leader and the other cursed attorney from Teton County that this language, there's a problem with this language, and it can be fixed, to be clarified. I understood it in committee what your intent was, but I don't think the language quite captures that. With regard to what date, let me give you a little history about mineral tax history in Wyoming and incentives. And I asked LSO to get this for me, and I've seen it before, but there's a whole spreadsheet showing this history. In 1969, we imposed the first severance tax on coal, along with others, and that was 1%. 5 years later, we created the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund with the 1.5% severance tax on coal. And that was the joint resolution that changed our Constitution 5 years later. So it was 1% for 5 years. Went up to 1.5 or 2.5. Then in 1974, again, we increased the severance tax rate to 3% on coal. So it was 3% plus the 1.5%. So it went up to 4.5. The next year, we increased it 0.5% to 4%. That was 1975. We also imposed a coal impact severance tax on a graduated scale. It went up in 1974, it was 0.4%, 0.8% in 75, 1.2% in 76, 1.6 in 77, and after that it was 2% until $120 million was collected. In 1977, we increased the severance tax on coal by 1.6% for fiscal year 77 and 2% for 78 until $160 million was collected. We were up at that point on coal to 10.1% in 1977, 8 years after we first started initially taxing it at 1%. So the comments about we taxed the coal industry heavily at the beginning, we didn't. We taxed the coal industry heavily in the mid-70s and into the early 80s. And then in 1983, we decreased the severance tax on underground coal by 3.25% to 7.25. And I think I'm correct in recalling that that's about when the amendments to the Clean Air Act were passed that made Wyoming's low sulfur coal so attractive. and the production has skyrocketed from that time. Would it have gone up without those federal changes to the Clean Air Act? I doubt it, especially at 10.1%. People talk about what Montana has done with their coal and how they've taxed that industry into submission in relation to Wyoming. I don't know if that's true, but anecdotally it seems correct to me. When I look at what the Revenue Committee did, and I hear the good chairman's comments about his views of imposing a tax that's delayed so we force a study. I mean, this will be studied. Clearly, I think, whether we do anything or nothing at all, we will continue the Wind Energy Task Force. It was tasked to look at generation tax, but they only met three times. They really didn't have, it's a huge issue, and they didn't have the ability to get their arms around it that well. So do we simply say we're going to impose a tax that won't go into effect for, 2 years, and then it'll be delayed for 3 years from there so we can study it? That doesn't make any sense to me. What I said in my opening comments to you was some things about balance and the balance between how do we equity and tax policy, incentivizing economic growth and industry growth. This industry is growing. We're seeing it. Can we incentivize it more? Do the jobs matter to us? Sure they do. And then how do we balance that with other industries that are extractive versus this one in generation? But generation is hard to qualify because other states have not done what we're talking about doing. Does that then lead you to taxing hydropower or other generation power? We're not quite sure where it leads us, and we're not very good at identifying a clear strategy on tax policy. So I would urge caution. We have the committee to study this. Is it the right time to do this? I said no. And I meant this year. It's not the right time to do this because we can study it and look forward and understand all of the ramifications to this. What will be that step that takes us beyond where we are now in Wyoming? Like the Clean Air Act in 1983, will it be transmission authority? Will it be federal condemnation power of transmission? The industry is constrained by transmission capability now. We're talking about the condemnation on merchant collector lines that doesn't impact those public regulated utilities. But those are the things that we have to consider and look forward to. What do we think might be a trigger point in the future, and are we addressing it? Because we have the ability to change it every year if we want to. You see the history. That's just the history on coal. My goodness sakes, there's 8 pages here on other things and incentives. But after we taxed it for a significant period of time into the early 80s, we stopped adding taxes and we began to incentivize and exempt in some ways. So, you know, you can look back and see a traditional tax policy that probably wasn't planned, but we can see from that history where it has led us and apply that to the issues we're considering today. We can move this bill forward. This is the place we have these discussions, and it's a critical discussion. But to me, it just seems a little odd that we would set up the policy just so we can study it, because we don't have the will to study it without the tax hanging over our head. I don't agree with that, because this House started the Wind Energy Task Force, identified these issues last year. It's not that we haven't been thinking about them for a year and more, and we will continue to do that. We can change the makeup of the task force and really come up with a good policy that isn't done in a week or two. We can do it over an interim and study it well and really come up with a clear policy. So that's my position, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion? Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, I would move to divide Division 1 into 1A and 1B, lines 12 through 14 being 1A, lines 15, 16, and 17 being 1B. And I would call then and those are sort of backwards. I would call for the first consideration to be Division 1B. Division 1B targets the effective date of the Act. And I would urge you to vote against that and leave the effective date of the Act as January 1, 2011. Now, I'll come back to that in a second. Division 1A talks about when the act is going to apply. And I would urge you to vote in favor of 1A and make it apply after January 1, 2012, in accordance with what the committee did. That then would leave Division 2, which is the amount of the tax, and also this step-in that no tax will be imposed on electricity produced from a wind turbine for the first 3 years. Now, I have to take some exception with what I just heard about the tax in general. And it's always been my experience in business that paramount in business is predictability. And without predictability, a businessman has nothing. Now, we're not going to settle in its entirety the question of predictability about this tax, at least as to the amount, which is the ultimate question that a businessman wants to know. But this act makes a statement. And it goes forward and it says, look, we are going to have a tax. It's got a delayed effective date until the tax dollars start flowing, but you can count on it. There's going to be a tax. And after all, our counties right now are incurring the costs that go with this. And I think it's only fair for us to say to our counties, we have your back covered. There is going to be a tax. Industry needs to begin to factor that tax into their planning decisions and what they're doing, and they need to understand that the costs and burdens that they place on the counties with all this development is going to be a cost of doing business with their industry. They know from this bill, depending on what we do, it's going to be $3, it's going to be $1. They know what happened in the mineral industry. They know what happened with coal. They know there's going to be further study. They know there are going to be adjustments to the tax. But we send the message today. There is going to be a tax. It's going to kick in. We send a message to industry. Count on it. There's going to be a tax. We send a message to our counties. Count on it. There's going to be revenue from this industry to help you offset the impacts. I think that's really important on both sides of the equation. And so I would urge you to vote for the bill. I kind of want to get off that soapbox because we're still on the amendment, but I'd like to start with 1B and urge you to vote no on 1B, vote yes on 1A, vote your conscience on 2, and then vote in favor of the bill. Thank you.
We are currently on Division 1B, which is lines 15 through 17. Is there discussion, Mr. Majority?
Point of order.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I missed it, but was there a ruling on the proposed division?
We did rule that it was divisible.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. I didn't hear that.
No. Is there further discussion on Division 1B? Question having been called, all those in favor, 1B is lines 15 through 17. All those in favor of Division 1B, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Division 1B has failed. We are now on Division 1A, which is lines 12 through 14. Is there discussion on that? Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question on that one because I'm not really clear. If you look at those lines of changing the date, and you look on page 8, lines 18 and 19, where it says, this act shall apply to electricity produced from wind resources on or after January 1st, 2011, and this would change that to 2012. I'm clear on that, but I'm beginning to be confused about electricity produced from wind resources, because the other amendment we're going to be looking at, and this is my concern, is that when you start counting the days, is that it talks about them from when it's first produced. So the windmills that are currently in operation are already, would qualify immediately on the passage of this in 2012, because there may be windmills in the state that have been, in fact, operating for 3 years. So I need that understanding on that.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The way I read it, there would be no taxation on electricity till after 2012. However, those windmills that had been producing for 3 years at that time would start remitting the tax. If they'd only been in operation for 2 years, they'd have another year. The whole idea of it, if it needs to be made clearer, let's bring some amendments to that effect. But the whole idea of the 3 years is to have a cash flow for that long. Again, people, this is just a start on this thing, and it all boils down to the philosophy. Do you want to study it with a bill, or you? And I would encourage you to keep it going, because we get more discussion from if we get it out of this house, it goes to the Senate, and we get those people talking about it, and we get more ideas and more learn what the complications are, and the thing will not go into effect, will not affect anybody until 2012. But the more people we got discussing it and helping us with the problems, the better off we are.
We are on Division 1A. Is there further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Division 1A to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. Would all those in favor of Division 1A please stand? I'm embarrassed that I was in doubt. Division 1A has passed. We are now on Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there further discussion on Division 2? Question having been called, all those in favor of Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Division 2 has failed. Division having been called, all those in favor of Division 2, please stand. Division 2 has passed. We are now on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Chairman Anderson.
I turn I'll move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 101 and turn the explanation over to Mr. Carson.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you.
Carson starts with a Z.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and I appreciate the good chairman moving my committee the whole amendment for me. Basically, what it does now that we've reduced the amount, the amendment takes out the 40-60 split and puts all the funding to the counties based on their proportional percentage already in the bill of the wind facilities in their district. I believe the counties are the most impacted due to wind development, and if we're going to take it down to $1, I think it should all go to the counties and not go to the general fund, and would be happy to discuss this in greater length today.
Discussion on Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would urge the body to resist this amendment. Just think back to the comments you heard from the good speaker about coal. Just imagine if that was state policy, state tax and policy on coal right now. I'm sure the people in Northeast Wyoming would really appreciate that type of legislation and taxing policy. But look how it would affect your county if that was the direction the legislature wanted to go back in the early 60s. It would change the state as it operates completely today. It would change our budget completely how it operates today. And I think the body should take a serious look at resisting this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this is a great idea, and I think we ought to apply it to all of our minerals in the state. No, you know, all joking aside, I think that this is a serious situation. We, one of these things is that's a prevalent theme in this debate is that the counties are in great need of these revenues. And I have to say that I am skeptical. And I'm skeptical for several reasons. One is that the counties are benefiting from the property taxes and the sales taxes around these projects. It seemed that the main concern that the county representatives brought forth was a need for roads, and to my knowledge, the developments that I know about, those are all on private roads. And where they are on county roads, the industries themselves are rebuilding the roads, maintaining the roads, signing agreements with those counties. So I think that there is a reason to be skeptical about the need for all of the revenue to go to the counties, and that if we are going to tax this industry, that we need to do it in a responsible way that considers all the implications and the ramifications and the need for this tax before we impose an arbitrary number that is just fished out of the air. So, again, I would speak against this amendment and against the bill.
Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, that's a little hard for me to swallow that it was fished out of there. We have a committee that worked hard on it. Consider this. At $3 and 40% of the counties, that was going to be $1.20 to the counties. Now we cut it down to $1, but with this amendment, we can send that full dollar to the counties. We're not that far away from taking care of the counties with the $1, the same as we were going to take care of it at $3. And I say, let's address the impact first, and let's address revenue later. Let's look at those who are taking the direct hit from this stuff, and let's start there. Let's give them the revenue. Let's give them that dollar, and let's take care of the impact. And we'll look at revenue later. When we know more about this industry, we know more about what their costs are, we have some experience with them, then we'll do the same thing we did with the coal. We'll start to tier it up. And as we tier it up, tier two, tier three, tier four, I wouldn't expect that money to all go to the counties. But initially, let's take care of those who are suffering the impact. And let me tell you, my county feels the impact. And the county next door to me feels the impact, much more than the county that was represented by the last speaker. So I would like to see this money go to the counties. I think it's fair. It addresses the impact. Then when we get our feet on the ground and we get this thing in a more predictable fashion, we'll start talking about what the state's revenue ought to be. So I would urge you to vote in favor of this amendment.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to address this. I would speak in opposition to the amendment. In Yuna County, we have two large wind farms. One started in operation about 8 years ago. It was quite an event. There are a lot of pedestals there, over 100 in that particular farm. The second one came into production about 2 years ago. And the county, of course, has felt impacts over this as well as the communities. But by having this amendment go forward, I think it would be a mistake for us. I would certainly rise in opposition to it. The counties have been receiving some property tax relief on this. A lot of the roads, as pointed out here previously, have been constructed by the individuals that are building these particular windmill farms. And so I would certainly rise in opposition to the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question having been called on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has failed. We are now on the bill. Chairman Anderson. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a couple questions. And I think I'm correct, and I'll ask the question, would Wyoming be the first state to impose this tax? And if that's the case, if we're so sharp, why wouldn't California, the state to the west, and I shouldn't have mentioned the name, why wouldn't the state to the west that keeps trying to fall off into the big pond have taxed these wind turbines, and they're that short of funds? So that's just a question. My other question is, what are the ramifications from other states if we do tax? And the third thing, we had a select committee, and they studied it for a while, but I don't think they got into the taxation necessarily. And then we had a committee that's probably met a couple hours and talked about this. This is a huge issue. I think we're putting the cart before the horse, and in deference to my good friend from east of here, I think it's not good legislation to pass a bill to force us to do something when we know we're going to do it anyway. So I'm against the bill, and I hope you are too.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Somebody mentioned courage earlier, and I guess I would commend the bringer of the bill for his courage. Maybe this bill was handed to him for whatever reason. And I guess my first question, and I apologize for maybe some long-winded comments. They've been shortened up by other people's comments. But what's the true revenue need behind this tax? If we've taken this thing down to a dollar, it's about $4 to $6 million for the state. And I figured out for the community I live in, that'd be about $40,000. And I guess, what are the unintended consequences of this bill? That's big time sales. That's big time once the renewable tax exemption goes off, and that's property tax that goes to the counties. And it's are we selling ourselves short for not very much money? I would also remind this body that, you know, we're looking at $16 billion worth of infrastructure, power lines and collector systems and $15 billion worth of wind. And you can think about all those jobs. And I don't agree with the assertion that because of the quality of our wind is here that they're going to come anyways. We certainly have, you know, the transmission constraint that trumps all over these other public policies. But, you know, if we have the best wind resource in the country and we're rated 13th, you know, why haven't they come before even without this tax? So we have hurdles to get over if we really want these jobs. Another thing you'll discover is that we have some other industries that are, in a sense, could benefit from the wind industry. You know, if we start building gas-fired power plants in the state, they may not come, they may not be built, they may not add value to the resource we have if some of these infrastructure projects that are coupled with wind don't happen. The other thing is I have a concern just in the issue of fairness. You know, we're going to tax wind generation tax, and we're not going to tax coal. I know you can all argue that coal pays its fair share, and I'm not going to debate that with you today. But I guess I would consider or ask you to consider is if we only had coal-fired power plants and no coal in our state, if this bill would say wind and coal generation tax. The other thing is there's some things that we just don't know that need to be factored into this economic analysis. And you know, there's talk one or two votes away in Congress to adopt a national renewable electricity standard. How does Wyoming play with that? You know, are we going to be left behind and be scrambling to get go from 70% wind to 20% wind? And because we may have shot ourselves in the foot by doing this and not knowing what we're doing, it has unintended consequences there. The other question is are we selling ourselves short by adopting this $3 a dollar megawatt cost? So just things to consider. We did talk about this in the one task force. It was in our third meeting near the end of the meeting. You've seen the other bills that have coming out, and I think they're a good work product, and I'd compliment the people that have worked on those further since we've met. But we just haven't gotten there, and this is I compliment the discussion, but I would urge you that you defeat this bill.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Just briefly, as the prior speaker mentioned, in the Wind Task Force, we did look at tax issues. And, in fact, we looked at some specific proposals on taxation. And it's amazing in that time frame the difference between those proposals and what we have before us. And it's because we've had a dialogue and we've learned a lot, but we certainly have not learned all that there is to learn. And I praise the good chairman of revenue for his efforts on this bill, but I think there's sort of this false presentation or false assumption out there that we can just pass something through to send a message and then we'll fix it in a year or 2 years. And there's an assumption that, you know, no harm, no foul, and we'll come back and we can fix it and there will have been no impacts as a result of maybe unwise decisions we make in this session. And certainly if you become acquainted with the industry and you realize how dynamic this industry is, you realize that's not the case. There's significant development going on as we speak in trying to figure out how do we get transmission to this state, where do we get transmission to this state, how's this new industry going to work? And that will certainly continue over the next 12 months. And if we get it wrong, and if we get it wrong simply to send a message, we do have real impacts. And we set we can potentially impact that planning that's going to be happening over the next 12 months, substantial investment that could happen over the next 12 months. And it seems to me, wouldn't the wiser course be, we all know this is going to be an issue. We all know we will see, if this doesn't pass this session, we will see a tax next session. Wouldn't it be the wiser course to thoughtfully consider it and to not only incorporate what we've learned over these last few months, but incorporate what we can learn over the next 12 months when it's not going to impact the ultimate effect or effectiveness of the ultimate tax bill that we pass. So I would just urge your caution on this bill. I certainly agree with the aim of the bill, and we need to develop a tax structure that works in this state and that works with this industry, but I just think we need to look at it a little more.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On the Friday before I came down to the session, I went to Dad's and Donuts with my son at his school. And his teacher is an advanced teacher, and they don't sit in chairs there. They sit on exercise balls. And it allows them to be stronger, and they're these great big fat exercise balls. They're kind of fat and squishy, but they're not real stable. But you can sit on them with a little bit of effort. That's what our tax policy is in Wyoming, is it's a brilliant tax policy because 80% of our taxes are paid by people who don't live in Wyoming. Because we tax minerals, and the people who use the minerals are the people who pay our taxes, and that's awful nice. But that's our fat, squishy, one-support ball that's holding us up, and it's holding up 80% of our state. As you all know, there are, and maybe depending on who you talk to, diminishing attacks on our primary industries, and our primary industries are diminishing just because of the nature of their beast. So instead of a fat, squishy ball, that ball's kind of narrowing into a single post, and there's one single post holding up the financial future of the state of Wyoming, and that would be mineral severance taxes. And that's our tax policy, is that post. And if anything happens to that post, as any of you who've read Tax Reform 2000 know, our financial future in this state becomes kind of tenuous, and we start looking at some really difficult choices. Well, for the first time in my lifetime, we have the opportunity to diversify our tax base, to say that we're not going to be on the one-legged stool. We might have two legs. And we start having some rational tax policy that's not dependent upon that one stick holding things up. Now, when somebody looks to invest in an industry, the one thing that they look at is certainty. What are the rules going to be? And the advantage of doing business in Wyoming is that we're not a knee-jerk reaction state, that we don't change. Once we set our rules, we live with those rules, and we don't change them, so that people know what the rules are. And in doing business in Wyoming, we know what the political risk is. And people don't have to factor in as much political risk coming from the state of Wyoming as they do from maybe the federal government or elsewhere, because we stick with our rules. Well, here we have a rule proposal. It's a taxation proposal. And while we're going to study it, at least it provides some certainty and some guidance for folks who want to invest here to figure out into their equation. So because we're diversifying that one-legged stool and maybe getting some more air in our squishy exercise ball, and because we're providing certainty, I think that passing this tax, the way the good chairman has proposed it, is a good idea. Now, I don't stand here talking about raising taxes easily, but I also have learned from the experience of the good president from the other end of the building, who was the chairman of the Tax Reform 2000 program, who went through that. So I'd urge you to consider strongly these taxes and diversifying our tax base, because I think it's important to us, and I think it's important for a long time into the future.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wanted to address something that I don't think has been talked about too much today, and that is the equity principles. And as an example of that, if we look at the equity aspect from the federal government standpoint, they don't tax according to equity. They tax according to incentives, that they think it's their job to incentivize this industry. If you look at the statistics that came out, the total amount of subsidy and support through accelerated depreciation, grants, guaranteed loans, bonus depreciation, investment tax credits, and all this stuff, it adds up to $23.37 for each megawatt hour of wind energy. Now, you compare that to the coal, it's 44 cents instead of $23.37. And you compare it to natural gas and petroleum liquids, it's 25 cents instead of $23.37. I think as a state, we should look at it from the standpoint of equity. I think as when we looked at it this summer, they said that if we're going to be equitable across coal and across natural gas, that tax should be $5. Now, some people are saying, well, it should be $3, and that's not the point. But the point is, if we don't have any tax, all we're doing is following the misguided lead of the federal government in this and saying that, well, it's not just the federal government's job to incentivize this, but it's the state's job as well. The other thing to keep in mind is that these local governments do need revenue, but they have incurred costs. And if it's not compensated for, somebody's going to pay the costs anyway. It's just a matter of who pays it. Now, the industry would like to see the regular taxpayers of each of these counties pay it because of, I guess, the benefits of having the extra wind generated in their own county. I think that it should be kind of a pay-as-you-go basis.
We heard testimony in committee. There's no doubt these counties have incurred costs of maintenance and a lot of other costs as well. We also need to consider that we do have possible exposure to future costs. A lot of these early turbines that were built in this county or in the state were not bonded. We have no protection as to what happens when these wind farms come out of favor. You know, a lot of people say that instead of calling them wind farms, they're really tax code farms, because that's what generates the interest in wind energy in the first place. Clearly, if the government set the playing field equal, there would be no wind, because it's not efficient, it's not competitive. I think our function should be looking at where the costs are, who's incurring the costs, and how do we get that origin of the costs to pay for the incremental costs that they're incurring. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Mr. Speaker.
Madam Chairman, just a little discussion about this issue of predictability. You can look back to the promotional material for the state of Wyoming back to 1900, and we promoted ourselves as no state income tax, good tax climate, and all of those things. And no one came here. Very few people came, and they didn't come for the tax climate. But to my point of predictability, what is predictable in this bill? What predictability does the bill give us? The only predictability is that you will be taxed. And if that's the predictability we want, message we want to send, that's fine too. It's got a dollar per kilowatt hour after 3 years of production. But when I look back over the last 10 or 20 years, do we have a reputation of being a predictable tax climate? No, we don't. Not at all. When mineral revenues go down, we have talked to the Tax Reform 2000 about other forms of taxation. I think it's just the opposite of predictability. We can achieve greater predictability by studying it next year and making sure that we know what we're doing, and not offering a potential framework that may not be anything close to what we do. And on the issue of diversifying the tax base, darn right. But do you tax it to diversify it? I don't think you do. You incentivize it to grow and allow the taxation to go with it in a reasonable way, which is what happened with coal and those types of things. This is a great way to diversify our tax base. But that's not dependent, I don't think, on us saying here in this bill that we will tax you. Let's do what we can to incentivize the industry. The industry is growing. It's having restraints placed upon it, not of our own making. As I said, it's a great balance, but this is a very interesting discussion, and the types of discussions we should have about tax policy. And darn right, the local governments need compensation for the impacts. They're getting the property taxes. The sales tax exemption on the construction will come off in 2011. There'll be some compensation there. So we have not left our local governments away, or we have not ignored their needs. And when I look at the fiscal note, as I recall it, it was $12 million. 60% of that would go to the general fund and 40% to the counties. I'm getting hang signals from the chairman. Maybe I mixed that up a little bit. But we can address the impacts through the property tax and the sales tax exemption in the 1 year or whatever it is, 12 months or 10 months even before this legislature meets again. And in that interim, we'll have the ability to really take a close look at these issues. Thanks.
Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, I don't want to belabor it a lot, but, you know, hope springs eternal. And the longer we sit here and dilly-dally about this, the longer that hope is out there that maybe they can put it off some more and put it off some more. And they've been here quite a while, and they've impacted our counties, impacted our state, and they're making money right now, given their tax credits. And so I say enough is enough. I don't mind the committee cut it down to a dollar. I don't mind that. I don't mind the delay. They're taking into account the depreciation schedules. They get a double declining balance on their depreciation schedule, which means they bleed the thing out in 6 years, and it's got an accelerated depreciation to it. I don't care about all that, but at some point there, at some point, a tax needs to start, and I say it's time. And I say let's make a statement. As I said, let's tell the counties we got your back. Let's tell industry there's going to be a tax. It's going to be adjusted. We're going to be reasonable. We're starting out in a very reasonable fashion. Let's pass the bill and let's get started.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's been a really good debate. I think people have pretty much made up their minds, so I'll keep this brief. But it just reminds me of, I'll use a name here, Yogi Berra, and it's deja vu all over again. I can just hear the echoes in this chamber from 40 years ago, 1970, except those opposing this bill were all from the oil and gas industry. Incidentally, in 1970, oil and gas production peaked in Wyoming. So it did come down after that. I don't think it was because of the tax. And I don't think wind generation will go down after this if we say we're going to tax this in the future. So let's get this bill in there. This starts setting this place, and then we'll continue to look at this. And I guarantee you the tax isn't going to stay at a dollar. It's going to go up and down in relation to the economy, just like our other taxes do in Wyoming. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. This bill has done just what I would hope that it do. We get the debate. I didn't hope that I hoped it wouldn't last quite this long. Of course, you want to remember the federal tax break on the rebate for income tax is $21 a megawatt. Every industry, the wind industry, gets that automatically. If they can't use it, they can sell it. Many of those wind industries have up to 4 cents, whatever they want to call it. It isn't that high in the state that individuals can pay for green energy. That's $40 a megawatt. So there's plenty of incentives. They can depreciate that real fast. I don't think we're necessarily installing a tax. What we're doing is getting the debate out there. I would encourage you to pass the bill. Let's get it over on the other side so they can get some ideas into it. And if it passes, that's fine. If it doesn't, we've got the debate going. We'll know where we're going to go with the thing. And appreciate all the debate. It's been very good, many good points. And this is exactly what I wanted the bill to do, get some ideas going and interest in it. And with that, I'd call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill number 101 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division having been called, all those in favor, please stand. House Bill number 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chair, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 19, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 29, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 57, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Representative Buchanan moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. House Bill 20, recommended do pass. House Bill 71, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution number 8, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill number 58, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 101, amended. Recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Kraft, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Nice job. That's fine. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 117, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 24, Community-Based In-Home Service, Ayes 30, No 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 118, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing, Ayes 29, Noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 119, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 43, Game and Fish Special Hunting License, Hunting Season Extension, Ayes 29, Noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 120, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting, Ayes 27, Noes 3, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 121, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 8, Medical Support of Children, Ayes 19, Noes 11, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 61. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart. Excused, Philp. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 102. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Reading Clerk. I would like to announce the corrected third reading vote on House Joint Resolution 4 this morning. Representative Madden was a no vote, and it was incorrectly put down as an aye vote. The bill did pass with the necessary two-thirds vote, 50 ayes, 7 noes, and 3 excused. Committee announcements. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. in room 204, where they will take up House Bill 23, Business Entities, reinstatement fees that was re-referred from corporations, and the committee will hear additional re-referred bills if assigned and if time allows. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment Wednesday in room H10, where they will take up House Bill 120, Student Assessment Measures.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, upon adjournment, we will go back into discussing House Bill 113, Concealed Weapon Authority, and House Bill 95, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act number 2. And then tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room H8, we will take up House Bill 83, Crimes and Offenses, Restrictions for Adult Sex Offenders, House Bill 75, Loss of Parental Rights, Homicide of Spouse, and House Bill 94, Real Property Easements.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in room 302 to discuss some of the following bills. House Bill 106, Small Business Investment Credit. House Bill 78, Specific Purpose. House Bill 115, Specific Purpose Excise Tax. And then House Bill 78, Natural Gas Taxation. And then if we have time, we'll discuss property tax levy date, taxation of public buildings, railroad rolling stock, and ethanol.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6 will meet Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. We'll meet Wednesday morning, February 17th at 8 a.m. in room H10 to consider the following bills, House Bill 47, NEPA and ESA review, House Bill 99, Public Records, Wolf Hunting Licenses.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment in room H17 to hear House Bill 119, Public Health Nurses, and House Bill 63, Tanning Salons Minors.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30, room H18, to hear the following bills. 111, Electric Transmission Considerations of Regional Issues. Number 60, UPMIFA, Expenditure Limitation. House Bill 97, Nuclear Energy Production Study. And if time allows, House Bill 59, Workforce Service Amendments, House Bill 55, also if time allows, and Economic Development Reporting. And we close the public testimony on House Bill 93 on Monday, and we will work the bill sometime in that schedule. There's no need for public announcement.
Thank you. Would the Revenue Committee meet very briefly after we adjourn here in my office? Chairman Anderson, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you. I remind you of the Bible study and the Hersler Building Commons in the morning at 6:30. If you have a piece of paper on your desk somewhere, if you can find it.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Wednesday, February 17, 2010 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. House is adjourned until Wednesday morning, February 17th at 10 a.m.